It's very nice that you're all taking part. How many of you have read Brahma Samhita? About half of you. How many of you succeeded in understanding it without too much trouble? Really? We are aware that it's not an easy book. In fact, I'm sure it's the most difficult book we have. Difficult BBT book we have. And Srila Prabhupada, I'm sure you've heard that he said that he would always sit and listen to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would talk for a long time. 2 or 3 hours per class was apparently fairly standard. And because, of course, he was normally speaking in Bengali. But whatever the language, even Bengali we can understand. Srila Prabhupada said that he used very high level vocabulary and different like modes of expression he would use. And Prabhupada said that sometimes he wouldn't understand clearly, but he did understand that it was transcendentally beneficial. So he would sit and listen, and when Srila Prabhupada was going to be initiated, that was that Allahabad, I think, and he was like a Namahatta or congregational devotee, and the devotees thought that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wouldn't know him, so they were presenting some list of names, people to be initiated, and this one, that one, the other one, and then this Abhay Charan Day. And the devotee said, oh, started giving a little description, assuming that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta wouldn't be familiar with Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, yes, I know him. He listens well. He doesn't go away. I've noted him. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta appreciated that type of persistence in Srila Prabhupada, that even when the going was tough, Prabhupada didn't stop going. Prabhupada didn't leave, as happens sometimes. Didn't leave, didn't fall asleep. He tried to hear. He heard, even though sometimes on the surface he didn't really understand exactly. But it all went in, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta appreciated that. And reading through, I don't know what the Hindi is like. Did they translate from the English? Well, you know, they'd have to be like masters of the English language. You know, most Western devotees who I know really struggle. And I've been teaching the course now for a year on several occasions here and there. So I've been through it, you know, like I would say quite scrutinizingly on quite a number of occasions, trying to get things as right as I could, and sure, still it's like a revelation every time. It's a bit of a battle every time, actually. So just bear that in mind if you're not already aware that we're going to be dealing in some things which are not so easy. So please be a little patient. Don't try not to give up. And of course, we'll try and make it as clear as we reasonably can. So the course, we're going to be starting every day at 3:45. There was a notice up there said 3:30, but we'll be starting at 3:45. The course goes for the whole 4 weeks. So this week, then today, and then the remaining 4 days we'll be having classes. Then next week, the first 4 days and the 5th day we'll have a test. And anyway, don't be scared. It is, Srila Prabhupada actually says that it is pancharatrik by nature. Pancharatrik by nature means that it is to do with worship. To do with worship in the formal sense of worship. It's to do with, well, what we do on the altar, our deity worship, that is according to Narada Pancharatra or Hari Bhaktivilas. This is pancharatrik or tantric. Tantric means system of worship. So Brahma Samhita is pancharatrik. It is a book of worship, revolving around worship on a high level. High level of worship. And that fact, or what that means, the type of worship, in other words, that we'll explain. It's around about the third, fourth, and fifth verses. They are discussing the actual mode of worship which is involved. It's the third verse, actually, is specifically going into the details of the system of worship, very high system of worship. Brahma Samhita is spoken by Lord Brahma right at the beginning of of creation, but then as time went on, it was lost. And it was found when Lord Chaitanya was touring South India. Lord Chaitanya went to the Adi Keshava temple. And, you know, back in those days, they didn't have printing presses. You couldn't just walk in to the temple bookstall or alternatively Prabhupada's rooms and just buy a Brahma Samhita or a Bhagavad Gita even, what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam. In those days, the books were written down by hand, so if you wanted a Brahma Samhita, or that's a very short book, of course, if you wanted a Srimad Bhagavatam, you'd probably have to put in your order and wait, you know, a good couple of years or so, and then you might get the book. And as a result, because they're all done by hand and on leaves or pieces of bark, things like this, then they were really taken, books were taken very seriously. And, you know, you'd have the temples, of course, were the main places where there would be books, and otherwise the big pundits and people like that would have books. But the temples were really the main places where books were kept. And because the books were so rare, even Srimad Bhagavatam was so rare, then people wherever the books were sometimes, they were like places of pilgrimage. People would come and offer their obeisances to the books and just, you know, throw themselves on the ground in front of the books. And when Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur and Shamananda Pandit were preparing to go on their first traveling book distribution Sankirtan party here in Vrindavan, they were loading the books. There was only one of each. They were loading the books into the cart. And all the people, hundreds of people, came to see what was going on. Not just what was going on, but in that mood of worship. And the person on the cart, as the book, one book after another, was passed up, he'd lift it up and say, "Here is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu." And all the devotees would cheer and clap. Yes. And of course, when it appeared that the books were stolen and there was only one copy of each, you can just imagine how they felt. Wow, you know, what a loss that is like. Totally. Imagine going back. Well, I think even Rupa Goswami had actually left the planet. Just going back and telling Jiva Goswami, "Sorry. Gosh, we're really sorry. We lost the books." Nowadays, of course, they're almost like a dime a dozen, or that's the impression we sometimes get. The books, you know, sometimes they're just kind of left here and there and they deteriorate. So along with the good fortune of having them more readily available, there's also this aspect of familiarity sometimes breeding contempt. But Lord Chaitanya, when he was down there at the Adi Keshava temple, somewhere down in deep Tamil Nadu, then he was going through the temple library and he found one copy of Brahma Samhita and he was ecstatic, completely ecstatic to find a copy of this book. He took it to be just like a very amazing revelation. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and actually on the very first page of your overview books, there is two of the verses spoken directly by Lord Chaitanya when he stumbled upon this copy of Brahma Samhita. So this is Madhya Lila chapter 9, verses 239 to 240. Siddhanta Shastra Nahi Brahma Samitara Sama Govinda Mahima Gyanir Parama Karana Alpakshare Kahe Siddhanta Apara Sakala Vaishnava Shastra Madhye Atisara. There is no scripture equal to the Brahma Samhita as far as the final spiritual conclusion is concerned. Indeed, that scripture is the supreme revelation of the glories of Lord Govinda, for it reveals the topmost knowledge about him. Since all conclusions are briefly presented in the Brahma Samhita, it is essential among all the Vaishnava scriptures. This is Lord Chaitanya speaking. He is extremely enthusiastic and so happy to have found one copy of Brahma Samhita. And he's declaring it to be the supreme revelation of all of the glories of Lord Govinda. Topmost knowledge about Govinda. It contains all conclusions. Just see, such a small book. All conclusions are there. That's quite amazing. And in fact, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada lists out some of the subjects discussed in this book. Prabhupada says, Achincha Bedabe Tattva, Methods of Devotional Service, 18-syllable Vedic hymn, The Soul, Supersoul, Fruit of Activity, Karma Gayatri, Karma Bija, Mahavishnu, The Spiritual World, particularly Goloka Vrindavan, Ganesh and various other demigods, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Gayatri Mantra, Govinda, the living entities, the highest goal, Durga, austerity, the gross elements, love of God, impersonal Brahman, the initiation of Lord Brahma, his vision in transcendental love, the steps of devotional service, the mind, yoga nidra, the goddess of fortune, spontaneous devotional service, different incarnations, deities, the conditioned soul and its duties, the truth about Lord Vishnu, prayers, Vedic hymns, Lord Shiva, the Vedic literature, personalism and impersonalism, good behavior, and many other subjects. It's all here in this book. So this is something like condensed nectar, you could say. It's all to do, all these subjects are presented in terms of their connection with Govinda, with Krishna. So from the strictly Vaishnav perspective, and so many subjects, all the essential truths, just like Srimad Bhagavatam, in a sense, Brahma Samhita is sort of like a condensed form of Srimad Bhagavatam. We will read shortly Jiva Goswami's written a commentary on Brahma Samhita, and he presents at the beginning a Mangala Charana. Mangala Charana means a series of verses to invoke auspiciousness, basically, at the beginning of the book. So he presents a Mangala Charana, different prayers at the beginning of his commentary on Brahma Samhita. And he makes this point that Brahma Samhita is like a condensed form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is considered the ripened fruit from the very top of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam is approximately 18,000 verses. And a few years ago, I was going through some of the commentaries, which we have actually, I think, down in the library downstairs, on some of the later cantos after Srila Prabhupada's work stopped after the 13th chapter. So I was reading through the commentaries to the chapter in the 10th canto dealing with the killing of Pondraka. I assume you're all familiar with Pondraka. He is a very special person. He was given a benediction by Lord Shiva that he could look like Krishna. Anyway, we won't go into the details of Pondraka. He was a kind of bizarre character, actually, presenting himself as Krishna. And, you know, it's amazing. Sometimes things happen in ISKCON even, and some people get misled, and we think, you know, how could they get misled like that? You know, whatever the point is that they're misled about, we may think that, you know, it's not so hard to understand that. But in this case, Pondraka was presenting himself as Krishna with four arms, and he had many followers. Many followers, actually. He was taken very seriously. So Shukadeva Goswami, though, as he is introducing and explaining who is this Pondraka at the beginning of the chapter, he says that, the exact words I forget, but it's to the effect that there was one crazy fellow named Pondraka, and he was trying to imitate Krishna. Something like that. Then about two or three verses later, Shukadeva Goswami says, there was a crazy fellow named Pondraka, and he was trying to imitate Krishna, something like that. In other words, the verse is repeated, more or less. So there, one of our acharyas comments that this is very unusual, that here in Srimad Bhagavatam we have a verse being repeated. And he says, the reason that Shukadeva Goswami repeated it was because he was just so astonished. He couldn't believe it. He was just completely, like, aghast. How could this Poundracker be such a crazy fellow? He was just so shocked that he repeated the verse, more or less. So the Acharya makes the point that in such a short book as Srimad Bhagavatam, which is only 18,000 verses, that a verse should be repeated means it's a very important thing. Isn't that interesting? Yes. In such a short book as Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he mentions one or two other verses which are repeated. There's that verse which begins, Tuliyama Levenapi Naswaragam Napunarbhavam Bhagavat Sangi Sangasya Martyanam Kimutashisha. Tuliyama Lavenapi. It's talking about how rare it is to get the association of devotees. That appears three or four times. With just, in one or two cases, there's slight variation in the words. So that's very important. Anyway, you know, this Brahma Samhita is a condensed form of the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, the glories of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, the top and the topmost devotees and the topmost forms of devotional service like this. So if Srimad Bhagavatam is considered a small book that the author, Shukadev Goswami, has, you could say, struggled to keep things brief and succinct and to the point and not sort of go on. If you've read Mahabharata, you might, or even Ramayana, you might get some idea of what it means for the author to go on and on a bit. Like, I think it's the first chapter of Mahabharata, where Dhritarashtra is lamenting. Is that the first chapter? That when this happened, I knew we would lose. When that happened, I knew we would lose. So he gives about hundreds of examples. When this happened, I knew we would lose. So he goes like on and on and on and on. But our acharyas make the point that in Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami has painstakingly been brief and not repeated anything and used very tight language. So how tight is Brahma Samhita? It's condensed nectar. Srimad Bhagavatam is essential nectar and Brahma Samhita is super condensed nectar. Essential nectar. It's really something very, very amazing. So much is there in definitive forms, meaning clear and establishing the point nicely. So many points are covered and established extremely succinctly. So, like this, Brahma Samhita is very important for us. I'm going to read Jiva Goswami's Mangala Charana, at least the translation of it. It's very nice. Jiva Goswami says, within my heart I worship the splendor of Lord Krishna's transcendental form. I desire that by Lord Krishna's mercy, I will be able to explain the verses of Brahma Samhita. Although the Brahma Samhita is a very difficult book, the commentaries of the sages have made it easy to understand. My words follow their explanations. Although the Brahma Samhita contains 100 chapters, because this chapter briefly describes Lord Krishna's transcendental form, it is the best. the same transcendental sweetness the pure-hearted devotees see in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vaishnav Shastras is also present in the Brahma Samhita. For this reason, my heart is now happy. After due reflection, in this book, I've lightly touched on the same topics, more elaborately explained in my Sri Krishna Sandarbha. So that is the Mangala Charana of Jiva Goswami, with great devotion and feeling. He's expressing his appreciation for Brahma Samhita and how the devotees see the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam in it. What we'll do now is, let us just have a look through the overview book and see how we have structured this overview and how we're going to structure the course. Altogether, there's 62 verses. We've divided them into six groups. The first group is, you know, sometimes when we are doing something, sometimes we start with the easiest thing first, sometimes with the hardest thing first. Lord Brahma started with the hardest thing first. So this first section from verse 1 to verse 6, or particularly really up to verse 5, is, at least in my opinion, the most difficult part of Brahma Samhita. So while your minds are the freshest, over the next few days, this week or so, we'll discuss the most difficult part, these first verses. And, you know, things like in verse 3, verses 4 and 5, you've heard about the quadrangular area, right? If you've read the Brahma Samhita, you should know what I'm referring to. Right at the beginning there. The hexagonal figure, the mantra which is set out in a hexagonal way. I mean, you've read these things, right? If you've read the book. I don't know if you've ever wondered what those things are. I did. I got totally lost altogether until I stumbled onto it. This is it right here. Anyway, we'll be giving you these, I think, on day 3. This is the quadrangular area. You see, the whole thing is enclosed in a quadrangle. Then here, this is hexagonal, means six-sided, with the mantra there, and it's all there. This is called a yantra. We won't give these out now, we'll give them out. I think it'll be on the third day or so. So, what Lord Brahma refers to as the Mahayantra, Karanikaram Mahadyantram, the great yantra, which depicts Goloka Vrindavan. Anyway, these things we'll be discussing in the first section, section A. Well, first of all, there's the Pariba Sutra. We'll probably talk about that, I guess, tomorrow. Mahabharat, does it matter if I stand up? Possibly. I mean, could be interpreted, perhaps, like that. They may be talking about the supreme absolute truth in an impersonal way. But then we don't need to become confused that you know, maybe Srimad Bhagavatam, maybe the, you know, like the topmost part of Srimad Bhagavatam is not Krishna, but maybe it's the impersonal Brahman. But the thing is that there's a second, not exactly Paribhas Sutra, but the second definitive verse after that Paribhas Sutra is, who knows what that one is in Srimad Bhagavatam? Sorry? Yeah. Vadanti tat tat vavadas tatvad yajgyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabjate, where it's explained that the absolute truth is seen in three features. So if